Shalom, this is Reverend John Ferret, and this is Lesson 22 of the Bible study course called The Gospel According to Moses. Now, in this lesson, we're going to consider two issues. Well, maybe not so much issues, but topics. One is I'm going to share an interesting possible connection, and I do have to say possible. It's just something that jumped out at me when I happened to be reading in God's Word on a certain topic, and all of a sudden things really made sense on a certain connection. So we're going to talk about a connection between the flood event and the end times. Now recall, once the flood is over, it says the waters are dried up. They're gone. This is in Genesis 8:13. The waters are gone, and Noah and his family leave the ark, and now they're on dry land. They're saved by God's grace. And they're on a new earth. Everything is starting over again. This is, God is saying, I know that Noah and his family, they're still men and women, and the inclination of their heart is still inclined to evil, just like before the flood, but he's starting over. It seems to be connected to a future time when the Messiah returns. We'll take a look at that. And like I said, it's just something that I saw, wanted to share it with you. The second thing is, the flood is over, and we understand that Noah lives another 350 years. In Genesis 9:28, he dies dies 350 years after the flood. Now, here we are, the flood's over, and we don't know what Noah's age is right now. He was 601 when he left the ark, but all of a sudden we have an event that's right before he dies, and so we could assume that maybe he is just about to die, but it's 350 years approximately after the flood, and what does God inspire Moses to write? That Noah planted a vineyard. What? Planted a vineyard? What's so critical about Noah planting a vineyard? This is God's word, for goodness sake. It seems so disconnected, especially from the awesome events that we just read about the flood and the ark. But Moses is writing Torah. It's God's instructions and not law. The first hearers of the book of Genesis are the Hebrews who came out of Egypt. Now, are we missing something? Because the importance of planting a vineyard meant something to the Hebrews coming out of Egypt. Is God trying to reach his people, his Hebrews, in 1446 BC? Did those Hebrews who were just coming out of Egypt, did they get it? Is God teaching them something awesome about who he is? You better believe it. This is awesome. And once again, we take the Bible, we put it back into its historical context, and just as it had meaning for the Hebrews then, it has meaning for us today. The story about Noah planting a vineyard has got everything to do with who God is. Come, let's go see. Well, I wanted to share something with you. Now, I just want to share it with you because it's something that just jumped out at me, and I thought you might find it interesting. So I'm going to go to Revelation 21. And like I said, this was related to a completely different class. But in Revelation 21:1, I read this. And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth passed away. And listen to this. And there's no longer any sea. Okay, what? What do you mean there's no longer any sea? And that really
bothered me. It bothered me in the sense that suppose you're the first, one of the first Christians, and John is writing the book of Revelation, and you read that. There's no other, there's, the sea is gone. The sea. And for me, I said, well, all they had was the Old Testament. All they had was the Tanakh, okay, Torah, Nevi'im, the prophets, and also the Ketuvim, the writings. And so here we have no sea, no oceans. And I said, is this somehow connected to the flood? Now, the reason why I did that was, I said, where in the Bible are we dealing with a lot of water? Okay, Revelation 21:1, we're dealing with a lot of water. There's no sea. That's a lot of water. Okay, when you consider how much of the earth is covered with water. So I went to, in Genesis 8:13, and so it was in the 601st year, in the beginning month, on the first day of the new moon, that the waters left firm ground upon the earth. Noah removed the covering of the ark and saw here the face of the soil was firm. In other words, you may have it that it was dry. God dried everything up. Okay, so that was interesting, and I said, all right, that's not necessarily related to Revelation 21:1, only for the simple reason that in Revelation 21:1 we have no sea, however, so everything's dry, but we have something dry here. I said, okay, I get it, but this is the flood went down, not the seas were gone, right? The seas are probably still there, okay, but they were part of the flood. But one thing I realized was, all of the evil people were killed in the flood, right? And only the elect of God, Noah, and he was blessed with his wife, his sons, and his daughter-in-laws, okay? They weren't righteous. He was righteous in his time, were saved. So the elect of God. So I put that down. The next thing I said, well, wait a minute. When's the next story about a lot of water? And I said, oh, the Exodus, the Sea of Reeds. Okay, because that's the actual translation. And I said, isn't that interesting? The enemies of Israel were destroyed when God told Moses, pass your staff across the water, and all of a sudden the water came back and all the Egyptian army was killed. However, the elect of God, Israel, was saved because they walked over on dry land. And I said, wait a minute, this is interesting. We've got the evil destroyed in the water, and we got the elect of God saved. Okay, that's the flood. Number two, here we have water again. We have the elect of God saved. They're walking in on dry land. That's what it says. And on top of that, the enemies of Israel are destroyed. I said, that's fascinating. I said, where else do we see things about the sea? But before I do that, let me say this. Do you remember what I read in Revelation 21:1? In Revelation 21:1, I read, and I saw a new heaven and a new earth, and the first heaven and the first earth passed away, and there was no longer any sea. Okay, but I didn't read verse 2. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, made ready as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is among men, and he shall dwell among them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be among them. Okay? So now we're dealing with the New Jerusalem. Before I go on to the next thing, one thing I want you to realize is this. I'll give you the verses. I'm not going to read them. But for instance, when you read about Zion, Z-I-O-N, when you actually go into the International Study Bible Encyclopedia, and you actually take a look at the word Zion. Zion is a synonym for Jerusalem. Okay? So in Isaiah 62:1, you'll find out about Zion, and it's quite clear the implication is about the city of Jerusalem. In 2 Samuel 5:7, it talks about the fortress of Zion, the fortress of Zion. In other words, the city of David. So in there, you're saying the fortress of Zion, the city of David, which is Jerusalem. Okay, very interesting how Zion and Jerusalem are connected. In Psalm 87, verses 2 to 3, in Psalm 87, it talks about the gates of Zion. Okay, the gates of Zion, the city of God. The city of God is Jerusalem. So in other words, when you're reading Zion, You're talking about Jerusalem. Now, in Revelation 21:1, we talk about no sea, but in Revelation 21:2, we talk about the New Jerusalem, okay, or the New Zion. So I wanted to give you that because I was looking for different verses about the sea. And I've often said this, in order to understand the book of Revelation, you need to understand the Torah, and on top of that, you need to understand the prophets. This is all Torah-based. The book of Revelation is an Old Testament-based book, okay? And so, I found this. Isaiah 51, 10 through 11. Listen to this. Was it not thou who dried up the sea? Stop. Oh, man, I love that phrase. Revelation 21:1, no sea. Here, it says God dried up the sea. And he said, oh, I know what he's saying. This is Exodus. Really? Let's read on. Was it not thou who dried up the sea, the waters of the great deep, who made the depths of the sea a pathway for the redeemed to cross over? So the ransom of the Lord will return and come with joyful shouting to Zion. And the everlasting joy will be on their heads. They will obtain gladness and joy, and sorrow and sighing will flee away. Ladies and gentlemen, these verses got nothing to do with the Exodus. It's got everything to do with the ingathering of Israel when Messiah comes in the New Jerusalem. Now, you've heard this said before. They will be gathered from the north and the south and the east and the west. Yes? And what do you need to dry up so that all of the Jewish people from all over the world can come to the New Jerusalem? The sea. I thought that was so cool, okay? And so for me, I just said, no oceans, no sea. Wow, it seems like the righteous of Adonai, this is the ingathering, the elect of New Jerusalem. Is this possible? And then I did this. I said, well, let's take a look at this. Is there any connection between the flood, Noah, and Jesus? So I did this. Noah, he's the only righteous man in his time. Right? Jesus, he is the righteous for all time. Right? Noah is chosen by God because he's righteous to be saved. Matter of fact, he's the only one. And he's blessed with his wife, his sons, and his daughter-in-laws. Yeshua is sent by the Father, chosen by the Father to come here. Huh, that's interesting. For Noah, his family is saved. His dear ones, the ones that are close to him. By the way, do you understand that Paul writes about this when he said, all of us will call out to the Father and say, Abba? If God is our Father and Jesus has a Father, do you understand that we're all the same family? We're the same family. And the family is saved through Jesus. I find that interesting. For Noah, he's picked to start a new start and a new beginning. It's not a new heavens and a new earth, okay? Don't get me wrong, because the flood killed everybody and that type of thing. But it's a new start. It's a new beginning. And what did I just read in Revelation 21? It's a new start. It's a new beginning. The righteous of Yeshua are going to be able to be in the new Zion, the new Jerusalem, and there's no sea. It's everything's dried up. So Pam, you'll be able to walk to Zion. So will I. I wanted to take LL. Okay? But I guess not. I guess we can walk. So I guess I'd probably just take my Toyota van and we can drive to Jerusalem when all of that happens. Now, I just wanted to share this with you. For me, this is me. I want to show you how my mind works. I'm a strange person. So this is something that I found interesting as I followed this along. And I asked myself, is there a possible connection? And I just wanted to share this with you in terms of these connections. Now, for sure, these connections that I made with Noah and Yeshua, that stands. I don't know about the sea. I don't know what God doesn't explain himself that there's no sea, but perhaps that's what it means. But I wanted to share that with you, and maybe you'll have other thoughts on that that you may want to think about. Anyway, let's continue with our class. So let's take a look at part two. One of the amazing things I've learned, and I've got to give credit to Dennis Prager, and many of you know Dennis Prager. He is a conservative talk show host. He is a believing Jewish man. He is not Christian. His life is dedicated to the teaching of Torah. He was just invited recently to a scholarly convention of Jewish Torah scholars, both Orthodox and very conservative and so on. They invited him because of his expertise. He was overwhelmed to be able to speak at such a place. This man is amazing. And he said one thing that when you do, and he said, whether it's reading a book, reading an article, or actually the Bible, you have to ask yourself the question, if you're reading, why was that word used? Why? Why is that word used? Or why is this story here? What's it here for? And he said, and I love the way Dennis relates this when you're actually listening to his Torah studies. And he'll say, there are times where he's reading an article in the paper, and this is how he reads everything. Why did the author in the article in the New York Times use that word? Try to get behind it. Why that word? Why not another word? And he said he does that with everything he reads. And so apply that to Bible study. Apply that to trying to find the meaning of what it means. So what I want to do is I want to do that. I want to show you what I mean. Okay, so we're going to go to Exodus. No, Exodus. We're going to go to Genesis chapter 9. And we're going to start reading at verses 18 through the end of the chapter. And again, I'm using Fox's translation as just another translation. And again, I agree with Dennis. There's no translation I like. None. New American Standard I like the best. Fox is pretty good. Okay, but New American Standard is the closest to the ancient Greek and Hebrew. I don't like any others. King James, I can't read. Because of these, and I don't like these and thous. So New American Standard for him. But Foxes, I want to use Foxes as a standard. Anyway, starting in verse 18, we read, Noah's sons who went out of the ark were Shem, Ham, and Yefet. And again, tries to use the actual Hebrew pronunciation of the name. That's not Japheth. There's no J in Hebrew. It's Yefet. Okay? Now Ham is the father of Canaan. These three were Noah's sons, and from these were scattered abroad all the earth folk. And Noah was the first man of the soil. He planted a vineyard. When he drank from the wine, he became drunk and exposed himself in the middle of his tent. Ham, the father of Canaan, saw his father's nakedness and told his two brothers outside. Then Shem and Japheth took a cloak, they put it on their shoulders of the two of them, and walked backward to cover their father's nakedness. Their faces were turned backward, their father's nakedness they did not see. When Noah awoke from his wine, it became known to him what his littlest son had done to him. He said, Damned be Canaan, servant of servants, may he be to his brothers. And he said, Blessed be Yahweh, God of Shem, but may Canaan be servant to them. May God extend Yefet, let him dwell in the tents of Shem, but may Canaan be servant to them. And Noah lived after the deluge 300 years and 50 years. In all the days of Noah were 900 years and 50 years, and then he died. Now, it's interesting. Noah lives 350 years after the flood, right? And what's the only story that God has Moses report on? Noah getting drunk. Why? What's that there for? This is Torah. This is God instruction. God's trying to get to us. He's trying to get to his people. Remember, one of the purposes of this class also is, who were the first hearers? These are the Hebrews coming out of Egypt. Okay, we've already talked about that before. They assimilated into the culture. Many of them, probably the greater majority, forgot God. And they were worshiping the gods of Egypt. That's actually proven in the Bible. So God is trying to get to them. He's trying to get to us. This is the only event, and the question is why? On top of that, three times, Ham, it's stated that he is the father of Canaan. Nothing about Shem. Nothing about Japhet. Just Ham. He is the father of Canaan. He is the father of Canaan. Why? Why three times? And Noah did not curse Ham. He cursed Canaan. What? These questions are bizarre. What is going on in this story? And on top of that, remember, Noah lives 350 years after the flood, and this is the only story about him? This has got to be critical. This has got to be super important. Why? The Bible is God's inspired word. We all believe that. And with God's inspired word, one of the things is we find out that there are very few answers. The rabbis have struggled with these verses for hundreds and hundreds of years. A lot of different opinions, a lot of different theories. Now, Noah is the first to plant a vineyard. He's the first. You'd say, well, wait a minute. Weren't they planting vineyards before? There was a flood, okay? He's the only one. So he's the first to plant the vineyard after the flood. Okay? So that's correct. Now, this is interesting, because if we want to take a look at the author's original intent on this verse, in other words, Moses, what God has got behind this, how did the Hebrews coming out of Egypt hear this? Now, I never thought about this before. But again, when I'm trying to present this, I'm trying to think about how the Hebrews might have heard this. Well, one of the things that we do, one of the things that we hear is this. I'm going to get the Ancient Egypt Encyclopedia. Okay, and I know all of you have this in your back pocket. And when I go in there, I looked up wine and wine production. Now remember, the Hebrews came out of this land, right? And they assimilate into this culture. What did they know? So from the Encyclopedia of Ancient Egypt on page 407, we read, "For the Egyptians, wine was a gift from the gods and was associated with Osiris, the god of death, resurrection, and fertility. The goddess of vineyards was the cobra goddess, Renenuet, in an extension of her role as goddess of the harvest and abundance. Wine also had a special significance in the cults of the goddess Bastet, Sekhmet, and particularly Hathor, the goddess most closely linked with alcohol and for whom a festival intoxication was celebrated." In other words, they got drunk once a year for Hathor. "Wine was in fact drunk to excess in a number of ancient Egyptian celebrations and ceremonies. Inebriation was considered beneficial for communicating with the gods." Yeah, you can be drunk. "Now I'm going to communicate with the gods. Petitions were more likely to be heard if you were drunk. And it was believed that the gods in turn responded to offerings of alcohol as it made them more benign." I find that interesting. I was studying in the, where did I put it? Oh yeah, here it is. This is an article from a website called touregypt.net. It's actually a very good site. And they've got so much on ancient Egypt. And they went into this and it said, it is in Egypt where we must go for our fullest knowledge of man's early and deliberate growing of wine. Plutarch, now Plutarch, for those of you that don't know, was a Greek writer and biographer in the first century. He lived from 46 to 120 AD. And he writes in his own writings, said that he was told that Osiris was the first to drink wine and to teach men how to plant the vineyard. Okay? No, what does the Bible say? Who planted the first vineyard? Now remember, you have to stop here. Did Egypt exist before the flood? No. What is the Hebrew name for Egypt in the Old Testament? Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is one of the descendants of Ham. So Mitzrayim, Egypt, comes out of Ham. So therefore, here's Noah, a man, not a god, who plants the vineyard. Matter of fact, not only did he plant the vineyard, he got drunk. Okay? The point being is, this is against the gods of Egypt. This is a big deal for them. And it should be a big deal for us as well, as we begin to see the reality of this in terms of how they heard it, not us. Okay? So it gives us a better idea. Now, Noah, he plants this. We've got the message from God to the Hebrews then that indeed, guys, those Egyptian gods are false. But he gets drunk. He's naked and he's laying in his tent. What's with that?
Indeed, we just seemingly looked at a possible explanation of God showing us the importance of the vineyard story, especially to those Hebrews. God is showing that he is God, not the gods of Egypt. And especially for us, he's establishing he is God. It's always interesting to take a look at the voting controversies today. God is God over all people and all nations, over all of it. Our faith in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is bigger than politics. Will we serve God no matter who is the president? Look what those early believers did under Nero, under Vespasian, Domitian, godless leaders, enemies of the church. There are heroes. Can we be heroes as well? So Noah gets drunk now and he's naked in his tent. The rabbis are perplexed about this. What's God teaching? Well, we got one thing beyond on the vineyard, but now this? On top of that, Ham, his son, enters the tent, sees his dad, and then he goes, tells his brothers. Did he tattle on him? It seems as if maybe he shamed his dad. Something serious happened. But why this? And then on top of it, Noah curses the descendants of Ham. He curses Canaan, or as we pronounce it, Canaan. It seems clear that this cursing of Canaan, the descendants of Ham, is somehow connected to Ham coming in and seeing Noah naked and drunk and then telling his brothers. The rabbis, over all of the years, agree with this. Something is going on here. But what? Now, all of this doesn't sound like such a big deal. So there's perhaps more to this event than we can see. Must be. This is Torah. This is God's instruction. This is what Torah means. It's instruction. It's directed teaching. God is teaching something, but what? It must be important. It is the only event, or the first event, in the Bible after the flood. So it is puzzling. And the rabbis over these years even have disagreed among themselves over what is going on. So let's go see. Let's go see all this in the next event, in the lessons of the Gospel according to Moses. See you then. Shalom.